You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai ao e awhinei I a tātou, tihei Māori ora. This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
This week on The Green Desk, we're talking CAMLR, which is short for the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources, neatly abbreviated to CAMLR. As we speak, the Australian city of Hobart is packed like a tin of sardines with diplomats, conservation heads and hundreds of marine scientists for the 37th annual meeting of CAMLR. To get the lowdown on the Antarctic, Jack spoke to the environment and science editor for Newsroom, Eloise Gibson. To start off, they got an overview of how the environment in the cold place way down south works.
So I think that how you think Antarctica and the Southern Ocean are faring probably depends on your perspective. You used to hear a lot of rhetoric about the Southern Ocean being pristine and untouched and kind of unsullied by human influence, and that used to be the main argument that was advanced for protecting it. But you don't hear that so much anymore, and I think that's because scientists are increasingly realising that the things that we do in the rest of the globe indirectly affect that ocean. So climate change being the obvious one, there is ocean acidification that's changing the pH of the oceans, and that is probably going to have an impact at some point on these marine creatures, particularly ones that need to build shells to survive. And then you've got things like there are these huge ice shelves that jut out on the main continent, and they're the size of whole countries, and they sit on top of the ocean, but they're permanent shelves of ice, so they're not like the sea ice that floats around further out in the ocean. And those are going to face the problem that if the ocean is warming, they're kind of being melted from underneath by a warming ocean and melted from the top by warmer air. So things like that you can easily see might change the habitat that penguins and seals and krill and everything else are living in, potentially over the next century or few centuries. So those are the kind of indirect impacts that the area is facing. But you also have direct impacts. So New Zealand's got a pretty active fishing industry down in the Ross Sea, fishing for Antarctic toothfish. Other countries fish for krill on the other side of the Antarctic Peninsula. And those fisheries, they are not huge compared to fisheries in other parts of the planet. So I think that's why I say it depends on your perspective. So if you think about something like the Antarctic toothfish, the rules that CAMLR has set for that species are that it needs to be fished to a level that it won't drop below 50% of its unfished population in 35 years' time. So in practice, I can't remember the latest figures, but I think it's probably sitting at around 70% of its original level, maybe even doing better than that, maybe slightly worse. So if you are someone that believes Antarctica should be untouched, that's a lot. You know, that's a lot of toothfish to be being caught every year. On the other hand, if you compare it to other fisheries in other parts of the world, some of them are managed at, you know, 20-30% of their original populations, and governments and the fishing industry, you know, say that that's a sustainable level. So, you know, compared to other parts of the planet, these ecosystems are doing comparatively well. And because it's so cold and it's so dangerous down there, and it's so, you know, fishing down there takes a lot of specialised equipment and it takes a lot of specialised knowledge. Fishing didn't really kick off there until the last kind of 20, 30 years. So that means that there has been an opportunity to go a bit more slowly and to maintain these populations at, you know, higher levels than most other places on the planet. And that means that there's quite an unbroken food chain. So from the krill up to the fish, up to the seals and orca and things that feed on the fish, the kind of web of things eating other things is reasonably intact, and that is unusual globally. So, you know, I think probably what you'd say now is it's not pristine anymore, but there is certainly an opportunity to maintain it in a better state than, you know, other ecosystems, other places around the planet. And that's what this thing of creating marine protected areas is about.
So it's on like a B plus average at the moment.
You could ask probably 10 different scientists, 10 different conservationists, or 10 different fishing companies and get a different answer to that. You know, some people would give it an A, some would give it a D. But yeah, it's certainly considerably less affected by human industry than most other places.
And so we'll say if we're doing all right down there, what's being proposed at the moment To further protect the environment. We've got these like marine protected areas. Is that all that's kind of on the table at the moment?
Yeah, so the idea is to create a ring of basically huge marine reserves around the continent. So it wouldn't be an unbroken chain going right around Antarctica, but there would be a big patch of each type of ecosystem that would be protected. So what they've done is they've divided. So the Southern Ocean stretches right around Antarctica, and what the scientists working for CAMELA have done is divide that ocean up into different domains, and they've said, well, look, this area is really important for the Weddell seal. This other area over here is an important breeding area for Adelie penguins, say. This area is where we think the toothfish spawn, and there's all these corals or whatever that also live around there. And what they're trying to do is take each kind of habitat or ecosystem and protect a piece of it. And the pieces that they're trying to protect are pretty big. So one marine protected area that's already gone through in the Ross Sea is three times the size of France, I think. And another one that Germany's proposing is about the same size. So the idea is that by protecting each, you know, a representative chunk of each part of the ocean, there will still be fishing and tourism and things happening around the continent, but each special, you know, food chain will have a part that isn't fished and isn't too badly impacted by human activity. And so far, you know, progress has been comparatively slow. There's the one in the Ross Sea that has made it through, and there are three more being discussed this week at the CAMELA meeting in Hobart.
Yeah, because it seems often countries don't like to be told not to do things and fish when they want to fish. So what are the kind of biggest hurdles to get these marine protected areas through?
So CAMELA operates by consensus. So for anything to go through, it needs to be approved by 24 countries and the European Union. In practice, the hurdles are generally China and Russia agreeing. So it's not impossible. Those nations have certainly shown that they are willing to protect areas. So they've both agreed now to the Ross Sea Sanctuary. But, you know, China in particular is still in quite an active phase of growing its fisheries and developing its aquaculture industry and things. And, you know, while the other countries in the European Union, New Zealand, Australia, etc., are saying, we think we should just lean more on the side of protection, sometimes getting those countries to agree can slow things down, but it isn't impossible, you know, as we've seen. So what happens is first the scientific committee of CAMELA needs to agree that a particular ecosystem is special, agree where the boundaries of it are, what parts are the most important to be protected, and then once they've signed off on it, it then goes to the diplomats who do the political wrangling to actually get it agreed. The idea is that getting the scientific agreement first should make it easier for the diplomats to just say yes, because all of the scientists from different countries have agreed that, yes, this idea is special, these are the boundaries, this is the part that should be protected. But it doesn't always happen. So one of these proposals is called the East Antarctica Marine Protected Area. That one was signed off by the scientific committee a couple of years ago, but it still hasn't got political sign-off. So I think getting it over that final hurdle depends on political will, and I guess also the skill of the country that's leading it. So if it's Germany, for example, trying to get a particular marine protected area across the line, it's their job to go around and talk to everyone in the tea breaks and, you know, come up with a really persuasive proposal that's going to persuade everyone else. Yeah, it has happened. You know, we've got the Ross Sea one, but it's unclear to me what the chances are of getting everyone on board for some of these other big marine protected areas this time around.
Yeah, I can imagine it's not too easy to get political will to protect a place where there's no people, or even more importantly, maybe none of your own country's people. So you're probably not going to get many voters in, you know, the top of Russia or China, you know, hedging bets on protecting the Antarctic.
Well, that's true. It is remote. But on the other hand, you know, because industry has come late to the area, the economic, you know, forces behind continuing to develop down there maybe aren't as unstoppable as we see with fossil fuels, say. It is still in its infancy as a fishing destination and a tourism destination. And so I think in another sense, you know, the forces that are against protecting these areas aren't as strong either. And, you know, you've seen recently this year the krill fishing industry that operates around the Antarctic Peninsula bowed to pressure from conservationists and said, look, actually, we are having an impact and we are going to voluntarily say that we're not going to fish around penguin breeding colonies. And by the way, we think everyone should get together and make a marine protected area in this place. So they've actually gone ahead of Kamala and said, okay, countries might not be able to agree on this, but we're going to do the right thing. So I think there is momentum in the right direction, but and, you know, they benefit from the fact it is only 24 countries in the European Union. It's not the hundreds that are in the United Nations. But you're right, there are always competing objectives, and there's certainly money to be made in Antarctica.
Well, hopefully now that we've got kind of these Paris Agreement and things of the like, that countries have a bit more of a longer time horizon, and they can say that overfishing actually just leads to no fishing.
Well, I think that is one of the arguments for these areas, you know, for marine reserves in general, that if you protect the spawning grounds, say, of a particular stock of fish, then that should ultimately benefit, you know, the industry that's operating in the ocean next to where that area is. And hopefully we'll see that over the coming decades with the Ross Sea Marine Protected Area.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Ora.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.